All right, folks, welcome back to the Mountain West Wire Football Podcast. This is a tight battle. We'll get to the team in a moment, but our website here, mwwire.com, Facebook, Twitter, MWCWire, all that good stuff, Mountain West Wire, Jeremy Moss, Matt Kennerly. We're back for preview number three of... You want it?
Utah State.
Go Aggies. Fierce.
And this is no slight to, you know, San Diego State, which, you know, maybe we're giving away the game a little bit. We'll be doing the Aztecs next time just because, you know, the response to the poll was so hotly contested that, you know, I don't think there's really any way that we can go wrong either way.
Nope. Aggies came from behind. San Diego State had a huge lead. Utah State fans came through, voted their tails off, and now we're doing the Aggies first. And also, 2 years ago, Utah State, highest, most downloaded podcast and team preview ever. So let's keep that trend going.
We have high expectations for everybody out there.
So, Logan, that means you share it to all your friends, buddy. All right, so we're doing Utah State, San Diego State next time. And we say next time because if you love us a lot or you tolerate us or you don't want to wait, we've revamped a little bit of our Patreon page. Yes, we're begging for a little bit of money, but just a buck. You can do a buck in 1 month and cancel if you want. I don't care. That's fine. But you can get this podcast basically, you'll get it before June 1st, this particular one on Utah State. If you have to wait, I don't know, middle of June, 3 weeks from now?
Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks from now if you happen to listen to a Patreon. If not, well, you listen to it now, so great. But if you want any of these early without any of the little annoying ads we put in, just head over to the Patreon.com. Or no, not the. Just Patreon.com/MWCWire. And you can just download the podcast there. All of them, not just this one. And you, as soon as they're out, they're up. Maybe some bonus stuff. A few other items as well. But that's how we're rolling. And if you want to join us, great. If not, that's okay. You can wait. That's fine. As long as you listen, that's all we care about. Just please listen and let us know what you think of our show here. So,
yeah, and in the meantime, also visit MWWire.com.
Yeah, that place too.
pretty much everything we got going on during the football offseason. Plenty of basketball news as usual. And, you know, find us on Facebook and Twitter at MWCWire.
Exactly. Hold on. Sorry, I got a random text here. Somebody sent me a wrong text here. Isn't that kind of weird when you get those texts that are very random?
That hasn't happened to me in a really long time.
Me neither. Part of it is my job at the moment. I get a lot of political figures on the radio show I produce, so I don't have every name in my phone book yet. So I get one behind just now. Running a couple minutes behind, about six blocks out. I'm like, no, cool. That's not right. Yeah, cool. Whoever you're meeting, sorry, but whatever. I have no clue who this is, honestly, as well. I have like five other texts, but... all right, let's move on. Let's get to our show. Utah State Aggies. Did you know, as a stat I probably brought up in our previous two podcasts, they're not very good in one-position games. I believe the record is 1-12, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes you wonder that whether this is the year where we can finally put that narrative to rest. But I think, you know, we talked about it a little bit with Colorado State and how one-score games really affected how we look back at their season. Definitely applies to the Aggies as well, you know, because they lost a heartbreaker of a bowl game to New Mexico State down in Tucson. You know, they lost by 3 to Air Force. They lost, you know, by 5 to Wyoming. And, you know, they were competitive in all three of those games. So it wasn't like they were, you know, getting the doors blown off of them and, you know, having to rally late or anything like that. You know, all three of those games were back and forth affairs. And if one or two of them goes, you know, in, you know, goes in their favor, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we talked a little bit about whether Matt Wells, you know, does he deserve to be on the hot seat or not? But I think, you know, that's the vagaries of those kinds of one possession games where, you know, if things go differently, maybe that's not even a discussion to have.
Very true. One thing, as I look at the luck factor for turnover luck, which is even more heartbreaking if you're an Aggie fan, they were what, plus 1.4 in turnover luck. But yet they still lose all these one-possession games.
Yeah, it's a little bit rough. But I think if you're looking forward to 2018, though, you know, the best thing you can say, the most promising thing you can say about this year's Utah State team is they have the benefit of continuity. Because when you look back at how the team performed last year, you know, on the whole, on both sides of the ball, it actually wasn't that bad. Like, they were actually slightly better on a per play basis on defense than they had been in 2016. Even if they slipped from third to fifth overall, they were, you know, a few hundredths of a yard better on total defense. And, you know, even though the total offense was, you know, a little bit hit or miss, I think they ended up right around the conference average. They were eighth overall, 5.62 yards per play. That still represents a little bit of an improvement from where they were in 2016. And they have a lot of starters coming back on both sides of the ball. By my count, or at least by their spring prospectus's count, they have 18 players out of 22 returning on both offense and defense. So that, without knowing off the top of my head, that I'm pretty sure is one of, if not the largest such figure in the Mountain West.
It helps to have everybody back. And one player who's been around, Jordan Love, quarterback, he's not going to be challenged by, like last year was with the Kent Myers. So you don't have to worry about, even though he took over late in the year, he showed improvement. Because it's like when you're the guy, when you have the chance of being pulled out every so often, looking over your shoulder, if you make one mistake, you're like, oh, crap, am I going to get taken out this series or not? Also have David Yost on the coaching side. He's back for year number two for that four wide out offense, five wide out, whatever they want to do, a lot of passing. So I expect their offense overall to be better just because quarterback there, OC back again. The big concern for me is going to be the running game, which has been an issue for a while.
Yeah, so do we want to start there, maybe?
Yeah, we can start there, because they, like, Tony Lindsay, is he still back? Is he one of those guys that's been around for, like, a super senior or something, it seems like?
No, I believe at this point...
He's finally gone?
I think they're presumed, at least, you know, if they don't necessarily have one guy in the backfield, I believe that their top guy is El Toro Allen returning.
And I thought he might be a decent guy, but they have, like... Obviously, Jordan Love rushes a little bit. This offense will have him run. Maybe Trey Miller, Gerald Bright, and a couple other guys in spring I need to double-check on. But that's their big thing. Like, they have a decent receiving group with Ronquavion Tarver on the outside. When you see what Jordan Love can do when he gets his chance to play, but it comes back to, like, who's going to be a guy who can run every week? Because last year we thought, oh, maybe Allen will do well. We had that, I think he had one big 100-yard game, a ton of carries. Then he fell off the face of the earth. They've had no consistency, even though they had, Devontae Mays get drafted by the Packers 2 years ago. He was hurt all year, but even when he was healthy, he wasn't doing very good, and maybe it's up the offensive line as well. They need both those units to be productive and as few injuries as possible just got to be average. Come on, do something, like, be decent to help this team out. It can't all be Jordan Love passing 40-plus times a game. That never works.
Yeah, I mean, I think if nothing else, what you could say about Utah State is that they have options in the backfield. It kind of strikes me a little bit, you know, even though they don't necessarily run the same system, it strikes me a little bit like, you know, Nevada's situation going into last year, where we weren't quite sure who the lead guy was going to be after James Butler transferred. And then it ended up that Kelton Moore was the guy who kind of came out ahead of Jackson Kincaid and really took the lead role in there. So even if El Toro Allen isn't the guy, you know, they did switch Gerald Bright from wide receiver to running back, and he did show a little bit of explosiveness in the few carries that he had last year. Like, he only carried it 29 times, but he averaged almost 9 yards per carry. And, you know, they got, you know, Morian Walker, who I believe was a 3-star guy, if I'm not mistaken. You mentioned Trey Miller as another possible contributor. It's really interesting, though, because they don't necessarily have a big guy back there to kind of power between the tackles, except for maybe Miller, because he stands, you know, 6'2", 210. You know, a lot of the other guys I just mentioned are smaller guys. And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of role they want the running backs to play, like whether they want someone who can run between the tackles, or whether, for instance, they want someone who can replace Lawan Hunt's production in the passing game last year. Because, you know, he did run for 800 yards and 11 touchdowns on the ground, but he also caught 30 passes. And, you know, Bright caught 10 of 16 passes as well when he was still listed as a receiver. So, you know, I'm wondering if you know, they're running a lot of run-pass option kind of plays, you know, because I don't think they're going to have one guy that's running for 1,000 yards this year. It strikes me as the kind of, you know, committee that they could have three or four guys with somewhere between 400 and 600 yards. And I think that as long as you're averaging, you know, 4.5, 5 yards per carry, which, you know, Love in his limited production last year, he averaged 5.5 yards per carry on the ground after you adjust for sacks. You know, El Toro Allen averaged about 4 yards per carry. I think if you could get that kind of production, you don't necessarily need the most explosive running attack in the world. As long as they can be mildly efficient, I think that will solve a lot of problems.
True. And one player who we didn't mention, it's also spring stat, so it's like how much do you want to take into that? But they do bring in a transfer from Northeastern Oklahoma A&M, JUCO guy, and Darwin Thompson, who was, I think, second and had 17 yards on 3 carries. So whatever that means, he's highlighted in their spring game recap. So maybe they expect something from him. I don't know, but more bodies the better. And his size isn't great, 5'8", 190, but he's the guy specifically mentioned. But when we talked about spring stuff, it was like, well, numbers doesn't really matter, but reps essentially matter. But with him being a transfer, I would assume also with how poor the running game has been the past few years, Thompson, like Bright, all these young guys and new guys into the system will get a chance to play.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it depends on what measurements you choose to look at, because, for instance, on, you know, yards per carry is a good one to start with. You know, last year they were 7th in the conference. They had about 4.6 yards per carry, but if you narrow that down to what they did in conference play, that number jumps to about 5.3. And when you look at some of the more advanced metrics, the question doesn't necessarily become one of improvement, but one of kind of holding on to the gains that they had from 2016 to 2017. Because one of the things that they've been fairly successful at, you know, in the last couple of years is what Bill Connolly calls power success rate. And, you know, I'm not going to give you the full definition, but essentially what that means is how well you perform in short yarded situations. And last year they were just inside the top 50, you know, and in as far as stuff rate, which is their ability to just avoid moving backwards from play to play on the ground, they were in the top 40. And so I think that, you know, even if they don't have a big body guy in the backfield, if they can stay within that range, that I think is something that Yost and the rest of the coaching staff can be really happy about.
I also think what will help is kind of shift to the offensive line, which also ties into the running game. They bring back everybody.
Yep.
It's the first time in a while that they've had this amount of experience back. It's 4 seniors, 1 junior. They have over, about 60 starts. Quinn Ficklin, probably the preseason center of the year, most likely, on the offensive line. They are huge. Everybody outside of Ficklin, which is center, you don't have to be a huge guy for center, but 290, that's close to 300. Everybody's above 300 pounds behind him. In fact, all but everybody who's not a freshman in both centers are over 300 pounds.
That's true. And it doesn't help, or it doesn't hurt, rather, that they have depth. You know, they have, you know, all 5 guys who started at least 11 games last year. And then they have, you know, backups like KJ Uluave and Dimitrik Alifua, who, you know, even if they aren't, you know, full-time starters per se, they could work their way into, like, you know, an interior rotation or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think you're absolutely right when you say that, you know, I've mentioned in the past that, like, losing a lot of offensive linemen at once doesn't necessarily mean some kind of death sentence or anything like that.
True.
There hasn't been a lot of year-to-year correlation in how that production translates to wins and offensive production the next year. But I think it's safe to say that bringing all 5 guys back doesn't hurt.
Exactly. And that's why Utah State, like, they're a team where when I did my quarterback rankings recently, you can check them out on the website, I basically said, like, Jordan Love's kind of a wild card type of guy. Like, I think I put him, 5th, I believe. Like, he's not quite up there with, like, Rippon, Marcus McMarion, even Ty Gange. I think I put him behind Armani Rogers, which, debating now if that was the right call. But, hey, we're sitting here at post-spring, so give me a break. But if the offensive line holds up, which, like, it should, the experience, year two of a pass-heavy offense, having wide receivers back, like, except Rotavian Carver, they have, tight end, Dax
Raymond.
Dax Raymond back. even Jordan Nathan, the slot guy, they bring back three guys with 25 plus catches, two over 40. And so his offense maybe was a bit low. I think the concern is valid for us, say, the running game, because it hasn't been good in years since Robert Turbin, those type of guys who are toting for every year, getting drafted, picked up NFL, making rosters. Mm-hmm. If the running game can be pretty good, like not even pretty good, just be okay. Like you said, if they have Love, let's just say like this is realistic. Love last year, 212 rushing yards. Him being the guy, more snaps, I think 350 is probably a decent range for him. And then if you have two other guys who rush for about 700 each, 1500 minimum between your main running back, 1700, that's pretty good. So if they can get somewhere at least 1500 from three backs, including the quarterback, and this receiving group they have, offense could challenge to be one of the better ones in the conference, like probably behind Boise State because they rip in senior quarterback Madison. They have some pretty good, like Richardson of the wide out there. Plenty of good offense. Nevada's offense will be killer. San Diego State will run very well. They have a senior quarterback. This should be an offense. UNLV probably should be pretty good moving the ball, I'm thinking, despite losing like a Devontae Boyd, a couple receivers, but I think this offense has the most potential to surprise, but I think they'll be like top four almost automatically. The running game does a little bit better, or at least consistently.
Well, I mean, I think that you say there's the biggest potential for a surprise. I think that there's probably the most potential for improvement from 2017 to 2018, because as a passer, Love showed you that, you know, he showed you his ceiling on more than one occasion last year. Like if you recall the UNLV game, that was by far his best performance of the year, where he completed over 70% of his passes and had almost 12 yards per attempt. And, you know, you can't really blame him for the loss to Air Force because he completed almost, you know, he had almost 10 yards per attempt in that game as well.
I believe the offensive lineman who came through and got the strip sack and touchdown, I believe it was, late in the game.
Yeah, but conversely, you know, he struggled against Boise State, which, you know, you might expect.
Yeah, who doesn't?
But he also struggled mightily against New Mexico as well, which is maybe a little more surprising. So when you look at the numbers, I think there's a couple of obvious places where he can improve. You know, one of them is in third down situations, because, you know, by passing down success rate, which, you know, go look it up on Football Study Hall. But long story short, their ranking last year nationally in that situation was 114th. And, you know, even on, I'm trying to look it up, like just their overall passing success rate was 85th. So they were below average at best when it came to throwing the football. And granted, that was between both Jordan Love and Kent Myers. But, you know, if you look closer at the numbers, one of the things you notice is that he struggled when it came to, you know, third down situations. You know, his passer rating overall on third downs was just over 100, which is not great. But in mid to, you know, from 4 to 9 yards, he was kind of a rough go. You know, he was 102 from 4 to 6 yards. Passer rating of 72 when it was third down and 7 to 9 yards, you know, and he, you know, six first down conversions and 22 pass attempts. Let's put it that way. So that's one obvious, you know, area of improvement. Another one is in red zone passing, because he only completed 36% of his passes and he only had 2 touchdowns on 25 attempts. So if you can improve at least nominally in both of those places, just being able to move the chains a little bit more, being able to turn field goals into touchdowns a little more often, you know, and it's not to say that Utah State was chopped liver when it came to converting. You know, they were just outside the top 50 on offense and points per trip inside the 40. But, you know, you saw instances last year where if they were able to punch it in a little more often, then, you know, things could have looked very different. And I think that Love can be a real driving force for that improvement in 2018.
Yeah, and I think getting more, because here's the thing, because while he split time, okay, there's that, like I mentioned, in-game stuff, but more practice reps with your first team players.
Yeah.
If he's getting, who knows what the practice regimen was like, maybe he was only getting 20% with the first team guys. So if he gets all the reps as well, just like you said, like he's a year older, it's going to be just him practicing more with players. It just, whatever they do off season, but that's that's a big deal. And I think you're right. Like, he has a lot of improvement to do. It's not like maybe that's why I put him in the wild card at number five. Maybe that is an accurate spot because he could be much better than five, but I think, I don't know. I don't think he'll be that much worse. But honestly, looking at the quarterbacks in the league, like, I could see him being behind Arian Worthman for what he does production wise. Maybe even Curtis Samuels at CSU, just because we don't know yet. Assuming he's a starter, so he could maybe be like a guy in eighth quarterback in the conference, like just ahead of like I could see on like just no slight Aggie fans might think this is nuts, but Montel Aaron at San Jose State showed a lot when he was fairly healthy, especially in Utah game where he led I think 10 points in the second half before he got injured. Mm-hmm. So he, like, I think Love and Montel Aaron could be a similar guy, more talent on Aggie's team than Spartans clearly, which will help Love's case, but I don't think he's he's kind of in the middle. That's where I put him right now. I think he could be close to really good, but I also don't think he'll be very bad either. I just think he's going to be kind of middle-of-the-pack guy. But if he's upper middle of the pack, that's all Utah State really needs to do, because as soon as we go to defense, they bring back like most of their defensive guys, even though they have a new coordinator.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, which I think maybe applies to Utah State more than a lot of teams in the conference, they really wanted to push the tempo last year, too. Yep. Like, I'm not totally familiar with the explanation behind adjusted pace, but I think it's worth noting that the Aggies were in the top 20 last year. So, you know, again, if it comes down to, you know, Love just completing a few more passes, being able to move the chains a little more often, you know, if he improves from 55% to 58% in his completion rate, for instance, you know, with everything else holding steady, you know, his yards per attempt were about 6.5, which I think, you know, it's okay. And his sack rate was right around 3% last year, which is actually pretty good. You know, it's those nominal improvements with the way that this offense is constructed, you know, those nominal improvements can make a huge difference.
Here's an interesting note. I go into teamrankings.com, like, I know you mentioned pace, but like plays per game, which I know can vary depending on who you play, but they're middle of the pack at 72 per, which I thought would be a lot higher, 72 per game. Did you know they ran 92 plays in that New Mexico State game?
I did.
I think it was an overtime game as well. That probably has something to do with it. Mm-hmm. But I thought they'd jump a lot, like go a lot higher than last year, but the year before, but they only went 3 plays more in 2016, 2017. I don't know what plays they want, but they want to be fast. I'm betting they want to be, here's the thing, 72 to 75 puts them in the top 30. So I'm betting they want to run 80 plays way up there. It's way too high. I'm betting they want to go about 75 plays per game, be in that top 25% of college football, which is, what, 35 range with the, what, 130 teams?
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look back at how many plays they were running per game last year, if you look at the games where they actually were closest to that mark, you could see the difference between when they were efficient and when they were inefficient. Because they had 76 plays against both Wyoming and UNLV, and they beat UNLV by 24 and lost Wyoming by 5. And there's a difference of 3 yards per play between those two games.
Hmm. Yeah, just it's, you can tell, like, there's always trends you can see, even despite there being 12, 13, 14 games. Yeah. But let's go to the defense here. Let's move on. Actually, offense, where do you think they'll be overall? Is my assessment, you think, correct? They could be like maybe top four offensive team, like top third?
I don't see why not.
Do you think, what's their ceiling then? Could they be the best offense in the conference next year?
That might be a tall order, but I think they could definitely be in the conversation. I mean, they should definitely be able to improve on where they were last year.
I would say the only offense I would say that would be better for the overall, not just one aspect, I think Nevada is going to be better than them no matter what, just because what they do. I will say San Diego State and Boise State. Those are probably the only three that are way better. But then again, the only one I would say that's miles ahead because what Nevada wants to throw in the ball. I think they can be a top three offense, but it's going to be – that's like probably my highest expectation for them. Like, I can see them being top three.
I mean, I think it depends on how you look at it, like whether you want them to improve or, again, whether you want them to just hold on to their gains from 2016 to 2017, because they improved by just about a full touchdown from one year to the next. You know, they were 11th in the conference in 2016, scoring about 23 points a game. Last year, they were one of 5 teams to crack 30. And so I think if they can at least do that again, that'll make them a dangerous offense.
Okay, that's good enough. All right, let's Should we move on to the defensive side of the ball now?
Let's do it.
All right. So Aggie defense has been pretty good. Not the best, not Gary Anderson, not elite defense, but the biggest thing is that they bring in a new coordinator, Keith Patterson. Mm-hmm. And we return 9 starters and basically every backup. This might be their best defense in, 5 years, perhaps?
There's the potential for that, yeah.
And if that's the case, that's where, all these one-possession games, it's all the small things. It's not just going to be, oh, they missed a field goal here, or bad play on what you want to call offensive pass interference, whatever it was, the Air Force game or something, PI. It's a lot of small things. But when they bring back basically their entire defensive line, their entire linebacking core, they do lose their 2 huge losses. Dalen Leavitt and Jalen Davis are both in the NFL now. Those mm-hmm. are huge losses. But the experience behind those guys, if you look who played a single game at their defensive back position, they had, 7 guys play 10-plus games, not including Leavitt and Davis?
I mean, I think what you're losing in Leavitt and Davis, you're kind of getting back from the other guys who are returning. And I'm thinking specifically about the guys they have at cornerback, Jamarcus Ingram and Cameron Haney, because, both of those guys saw a lot of action last year. And even if they weren't putting up numbers like Jalen Davis was, I think that, there's the potential for them to take on a bigger role and to be able to kind of improve their numbers. Because, as far as havoc numbers, like interceptions or, forced fumbles or anything like that, neither of those guys stood out. But I think that Utah State fans have really high expectations for both of those guys to be able to step in and contribute, especially someone like Haney, who, if I'm not mistaken, was a 3-star recruit.
Possibly. I'm not sure off the top of my head. But so what should we expect from the defense? And you got those guys secondary, everybody's back. Should I confidently say this is that best defense in half a decade? And maybe I'm not gonna say best ever, because that's pretty dumb to say sitting here in summertime. But if these guys are back and they can do something close to if you look at not to bounce around a ton, but when you look at their production, who's coming back, percentage of total tackles and everything,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty spread out amongst the who's getting what. So it's not like there's one that might be the one thing. There's not one huge dominant guy that could be solely a Tom of Vienna, but there's just it's a lot of not role players, but it's a lot of guys who produce well playing football.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see whether they can replace their production at safety, though, because I think as tough as it is to lose Davis, it might be Leavitt that is the more important piece to try to replace. And but again, I think they have options there, because Jontrell Roquemore, Gage Ferguson, and Baron Gajkowski, all 3 of those guys saw plenty of playing time last year. And at least one of those guys, I think Ferguson, is probably slotted in at free safety. So it'll be interesting to see, if it's Gajkowski as a sophomore who steps up to take over that role.
Could be. It's still a big loss, because Davis had 15 pass breakups, 5 picks, 3 touchdowns in a BYU game. And they have Leavitt. They combined for 9 of the 11 interceptions. So part of it is you have all the experience back, so they're not going to take away 1/4 of the field with Davis not there. They have enough talent to where, they'll throw to anybody, which means opportunity rate will be there for other players to make moves. And, yes, it'll leave other opposing offenses to not have to worry about Davis, but maybe they have a guy on the bench that will come in. Like I said, Haney, maybe he'll step up and be nearly as good as Davis. It's a stretch to say so just because how good Davis was, but he had 6 pass breakups. And like I said, all these guys back, even if there's not one guy, they have enough guys to rotate in and out to make it a very formidable defensive unit out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think if nothing else, even if the secondary takes some time to coalesce, one of the things I think you can look forward to is, whether or not the running game can take a step forward in its, defense. Because, they were right around where they were last year on a per play basis on the ground. They finished 6th, but they didn't actually lose all that much from 2016. And, even though they lost a couple pieces in the secondary, all of their key players in the front 7 are coming back. You know, Sule Tomaivaina is a guy I think, you know, maybe we didn't talk enough about last year, because when you look back at what he did, you know, he led the team in tackles for loss. He ended up 3 sacks, a couple pass breakups. You know, that's the kind of production that I think, you know, Utah State fans are accustomed to on the defense. And, you know, they have options around him too. Chase Christensen is back. Justice Tae is back. David Woodward is back. So, you know, even if they don't have one guy, you know, being disruptive like, you know, some other teams do, you know, maybe they come back and they develop these guys in the same way that they developed someone like Kyler Fackrell and the Vigil brothers back in the day.
All right. So, is it Vigil or Vigil? I forget.
It's Vigil.
Okay. Longtime listeners will get that. Thank you. But looking at, like, I go to Athlon, they put up their super early preseason conference players. Like, they have, like, what, three Utah State players in the 4 deep, it looks like, maybe 5. They have, who do they have here? Christopher Unga. They have Sully, who we mentioned. They have Chase Christensen. He's a linebacker, but listed as a 4th-team cornerback, so whatever. Gage Ferguson. They're not very confident that when you compare it to, like, say, Boise State, who has double that amount. Wyoming obviously has quite a bit. Even UNLV has a good number on there. So does that influence you at all to see how good or not good the defense could be?
Not really. I mean, I think what I look at when I look at this defense is, you know, in the same way that I look at Jordan Love to improve in a couple of instances, you know, one thing I would like to see more of is an improvement in pass rush, because while, again, they were slightly improved on where they were in, you know, 2016 as far as sacks, you know, again, they were right in the middle of the conference with 24. And it wasn't quite at the level where they were in 2014, where, by the way, they had 50 sacks that year. And, you know, I don't know that they necessarily have the talent to reach that number, but I am interested in seeing, you know, can they be a little bit better in that regard? Because they have a bunch of guys who contributed a little bit, but they don't have one dynamic dude who really took care of business. Like, you know, Tomaivaina had 3 sacks. You know, can, you know, someone like Adewale Adeoye, can he be a guy to pick up more than 1 sack? You know, because he did have 4.5 tackles for loss, and he did have, I'm trying to look up how many stuffs he had. He had 8 run stuffs. Both of those are pretty solid numbers. But, you know, is he a guy who could take a step forward? Because, you know, in the same way that I think Love can improve a little bit in specific ways, I think that's a specific way that Utah State can drastically improve their chances of competing for a division title.
So with all this talent back, what do you expect from the new defensive coordinator?
I mean, I think, I don't know. I want them to be a little bit better, because last year, you know, depending on how you slice it, you know, they were, you know, a little bit better than they were in 2016. But, you know, when you slice it even further to what they did in conference play, they were a little bit better than that, you know, because I think if you remove a couple of the blowout games, for instance, you know, what happened against Wake Forest last year was, you know, something that maybe skews the numbers a little bit. And then in November, for instance, they were the best defense in the conference. And granted, they only played 3 games, but they bested Wyoming by nearly 0.5 yard per play. So I think that, I mean, I don't know if I have a specific answer.
Well, he came from Arizona State, which wasn't really, because they got the new staff with Herm Edwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it's not like their defense is off the charts over in Tempe.
I want to see them be a top 4 defense, because in the same way that we have this kind of prolonged conversation about Fresno, San Diego, Boise, Wyoming.
Wait, top 4 means you mean 4th, not top 4. Because there's
them to be a top 4 defense, which means, well, and what that means is ending up in a better position than one of those 4 teams. And, you know, it may seem like a tall order, but with the amount of guys that they have coming back and these kinds of specific areas of improvement, you know, I think, you know, if I'm a Utah State fan looking to take the next step back toward contention, you know, if bowl eligibility isn't enough, That's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting them to be better than someone like San Diego State or Wyoming, one of those teams.
You think they will be defensively?
I think there's a possibility.
I say no way. No way.
They weren't that much worse than those teams last year. That's why I say that. And they were better down the stretch than those teams.
Maybe you make a good point there.
They were just outside of that conversation.
Okay, maybe I didn't. Maybe it's the offense that it's probably the offense that did them in a bit for me. Just I'm not looking at the defensive numbers at the moment, but I don't know. It's I guess maybe, but here's the thing: they're not going to be better than Fresno. I'm pretty sure. I just don't see them being like top four. Means like you said, they have to be better than Boise or San Diego State, and I don't know if that they can do that or Wyoming. Like fifth play, being the fifth defense in this league's going to be probably top 50 nationally, right?
You know what? I think by S&P Plus on defense, they actually were right around 50 last year. I'm trying to look that up real quick. They were actually, by S&P Plus, they were 42nd last year.
Utah State? Okay. Where were they? Well, S&P Plus. Like this year, they're sitting at 57.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm not giving them. I'm skewing because the offense was so bad. Defense had to make up for a lot of stuff.
I mean, I think a lot of it is going to depend on how they replace Davis and Leavitt.
Mm-hmm.
But I am pretty confident that they'll be able to do that. Like if the guys that they're replacing him with can give them like 80% of what Leavitt and Davis gave them, I still think that that's the potential for a very good defense.
Okay, maybe the win-loss record. Because if you look at who's above, I guess Wyoming wasn't great, but San Diego State, great record. Boise, great record. Fresno, great record. So maybe that's where I don't know. I still think they'll probably be fifth. Maybe they'll be fourth and get ahead of, I don't know, maybe Boise for losing Vander Esch, perhaps. But we'll see. You convinced me they're gonna be better than I thought they would be defensively, or maybe not better, but better than the better teams in conference. If that makes sense.
Mm.
Should we get to schedule time? I guess is it that time for the show?
Do we need to mention special teams real quick?
I always forget special teams.
You always forget special teams.
They're not special for me.
I mean, I think when it comes to Utah State, they should feel pretty comfortable, you know, in pretty much every facet. You know, Savon Scarver might be a guy as a kick returner who, you know, he had a touchdown last year on 26 returns. You know, he probably should be at least in the initial conversation for special teams player of the year. But, you know, when it comes to kickers and punters, you know, Aaron Dalton was pretty solid last year. He averaged 42 yards per punt. And Dominic Eberle, if I'm not mistaken, was a finalist. He was a finalist or a semifinalist for the Lou Groza Award.
I want to say semifinalist.
And so, you know, even though the Arizona Bowl may have left a bad taste in some fans' mouth, you know, this is still a guy that last year was 18 of 24 and was pretty reliable from 40 yards out. Like, you know, he was 5 of 9, but I think a lot of that was skewed a little bit by that last game. So, you know, I think if nothing else, like if the offense does run into some erratic red zone play, for instance, like we talked about earlier, I think they could be comfortable that they'll be able to turn, you know, those types of situations into some points rather than no points, which is a lot more than you can say about some other teams in the conference.
All right, and then they got punt return, like Jordan Nathan, like you mentioned, maybe Lindsey. Oh, he Lindsey gone, excuse me. Savon Scarver, you mentioned a touchdown there, so I shouldn't need to repeat that. But, okay, I'll give the special team some love this time because they have basically everybody back.
Yeah, and that's one of those edges that from any given week could be the difference between a win and a loss, and they have some pretty good guys.
Really quick, we haven't discussed this at all. What do you think of the new kickoff rule?
Which is it? What is that again?
Where you can fair catch it. I believe it's college, right? Where you can fair catch it within the 20 and get a touchback.
I mean, I'm okay with that.
Okay, I'm just wondering. Which could be a couple strategies. Because that takes away a strategy of pinning the guy at like the 5-yard line, like the high kick, and making him return it. So it's just more strategic stuff. So, all right, week one. Actually, let's do this. Oh, you see do you have the over-under win total in front of you at the moment?
I do not, unfortunately.
Do you want to take a guess at what it is?
I'm going to say 5.5.
No, 7.5.
That's interesting.
I think it's a tad high for what they've been doing the past few years.
That is ambitious.
I would be more comfortable if it was 6.5. I'd be more comfortable because they have made bowl games. I guess two of the past, at least last year, but not the year before. So if it's, we'll get to it in a moment. But 7.5, fairly high, in my opinion. They open up at Wisconsin, which we kind of discussed them with.
They open up at Michigan State, don't they?
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at last year's schedule. Whoops, hold on. I was like, wait, we talked about Wisconsin already. That was New Mexico. Yeah, at Michigan State, where there's a line out at the moment, like 24.5 points, which
Interesting.
I would stay away from because point spreads that big are terrifying. So Michigan State, some people are saying top 10 team. It's a Friday night game. It's probably gonna be Big Ten Network. I can 98% guarantee that because it got moved to Friday night. It's going to be a challenge. They've gone to the Big Ten before, like played Wisconsin last year. They played them years before. There's like, I don't want to say zero chance, but it's going to be a 0-1 game, right?
I mean, probably, but let's not forget that last year for most of the first half, they hung with Wisconsin pretty well. It was just that the offense wasn't able to, make a lot of hay against the Badgers defense. And so I kind of see this matchup being somewhat similar to that. Because Michigan State's fine. They do have a pretty good quarterback in Brian Lewerke, who was a big part of their revitalization from 2 years ago. He completed just under 60% of his passes, but he had 20 touchdowns against just seven interceptions. So that's not bad. And the defense was just about as tough as it has been. Most of their best teams have been. They were, I think, in the top five in the Big Ten on a per play basis. So Utah State's going to have an uphill battle ahead of them. I like their chances to cover that initial spread, but I think asking for an upset is maybe a bridge too far, at least for right now. So I have this one penciled down as a loss.
I agree with you there, but it's funny you say their offense is just okay, but they're projected like a top 10 team. But I guess that is Big Ten football, right? For the most
I mean,
part.
they have a lot of experience coming back. That's what I think the best thing you can say about Michigan State.
They do. And that 24 points, I'd probably take Aggies to cover, but it's still, you'll see when I post my piece, or maybe out by the time, it should be out by the time you're listening to this, but I think I put that like as a stay away because anything over three touchdowns and you're not playing the FCS team. It's so like I would not want to have anything to do with that. So next game is a rematch of the Aggie Bowl. New Mexico State, this time in Logan. We've already talked about the New Mexico State Aggies a little bit, but they lose like was it Larry Rose, they lose their quarterback, but they're newly independent. I think at the Utah State Aggies will get this revenge against them because obviously at home they'll be more tested from playing a week prior a really good Michigan State team. Should be a really good Michigan State team. But and the way the Aggies lost last year, they don't want to repeat that.
Well, I mean, let's not forget, they should have had this game last year.
Yeah. They should have. But also, one thing too, New Mexico State will be playing their third game. Because they play Wyoming that week zero, then they go to Minnesota on a Saturday, Thursday, Saturday for week, three games before Labor Day. That's kind of odd.
Yeah, I mean, I think New Mexico State's obviously, like we mentioned before, probably going to be another pass-first offense. So while they the Aggies do have some pieces to replace in the secondary, I think they can be a little bit better than they were in that bowl game last year because they did pick off Rodgers twice. Let's not forget about that.
Correct.
But they only had one, I think, like what, one sack and 54 dropbacks or something like that. I'm pretty sure that this defense can do a little better than that the second time around.
Well,
So
and with the New Mexico State Aggies losing that much talent.
yeah, I mean, I'm thinking it'll probably be another defensive fist fight, but I do think that Utah State's offense will carry the day.
I got that too. I got a victory as well because those things I mentioned. They're at home, they're rematch, the kicker won't miss. What, he missed three field goals in that bowl game. Next week they have Tennessee Titan Golden Eagles at home. Victory, say, right? Correct?
Yeah, I believe you meant Tennessee Tech.
Isn't that what I said? What did I
You said
say?
Tennessee Titan.
Oh. No, if they're playing the Titans, there's no way they'd win that game. I don't know where that came from. I was just okay then. Let's move on to the next game because there's no reason for me to or you to, or me to discuss that Golden Eagles matchup. All right, Air Force. Now, Virginia, like last year, do not miss this game. Because if I remember, the last like 4 minutes or the fourth quarter was amazing.
Yes, it was.
This time it's in Utah State. There won't be I don't think Isaiah Sanders will be getting the start, but if he does, that could be a little bit of something. But as we mentioned, Air Force, as we kind of sprinkle in what they've been doing with all of our other previews, their running game has decreased a little bit for who they're coming back, but that doesn't necessarily matter because they plug in some guy every year. It seems like to have 800 yards minimum.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to give the edge to I want to say Tennessee again. Let me scroll up so I don't see the Golden Eagles here. I want to give the edge to the Aggies because I can stay at home, which is lame, but I think the defense, maybe I'm coming around on the defense and it could be that good and they'll find a way to shut down the Falcon offense.
Well, I mean, like I just said with the New Mexico State game, like this was a game last year that Utah State really should have won.
Yeah.
You know, because they outgained Air Force. You know, I remember one thing that happened was that Air Force ran 97 plays.
Yeah, that's a lot of plays.
Even though they got outgained by about 70 yards. And, you know, the Aggies did pretty much everything right. You know, they had 5 red zone conversions. They converted all of them for touchdowns. It was just one of those things where, you know, really
that center play at the very end, they got the sack and the touchdown late in the game. And they still and that still almost didn't do them in. They still came back from that.
Yeah, and if you go back and even looking at the last 3 years, they've had 3 one-score losses against the Falcons 3 years in a row.
Well, in 2016, was it the controversial offensive PI Aggie fans wanted?
I believe that was against New Mexico.
I thought it was more than once. Who knows?
It might have been, yeah. But, you know, they lost by 3 last year to Air Force. They lost by 7 the year before that and 7 the year before that. I mean, maybe it's a little cliche to say that the Aggies are due.
But well, they're one and 12 in games where it's 8 or less points.
But I do think that they shape up to be a better team than the Falcons on both sides of the ball. So I do have this one as a win.
So do I. I'm saying they're due. Not to say that's lame, but it's like they got to prove me otherwise before I can say that.
Yeah.
Because, again, 1 and 12, and they're still losing these games that are close. Again, it's not like 1 or 2 plays. It's a combination of a lot of small stuff to equal that. All right, so I got a victory there. Then they get an off week. They go to BYU, which, remember, last year Aggies just blew the doors off the Cougars with Jalen Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Again, BYU is one of the teams we'll mention a ton because they play a handful of teams in the league again this year. Utah State, Boise State. Do they play San Diego State? I forget. Maybe that's
off the top of my head.
Maybe it's down the road. Whatever. I'll likely be at this game because the people at BYU sort of like me, so that's nice. Here's the thing about BYU. They still don't have a quarterback. Tanner Mangum is injured and some Achilles thing, which we saw last year. They don't know who their backup's going to be. They have a new offensive coordinator, new offensive staff, and people aren't expecting much for BYU, and neither am I.
So if Mangum's hurt, and I believe Joe Critchlow was the guy who came in last year and was a little bit not good.
Looks like he's 16 years old.
And, you know, and Bo Hodge was also not good, if I'm not mistaken.
Not great, no. He was not.
And they did bring in the guy who was considering Boise State for a while, Zach Wilson, as a true freshman. You know, is that something they look at? Or is it just, like, is this passing game just a lost cause?
Well, two things. Receiver-wise, it's going to be better because they have Dylan Colley from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
They have a really good tight end. Oh, shoot, what's his name? He was a redshirt freshman last year. Really good. Like, he was their main receiver last year. He was really good. He's going to be probably...
I believe you were talking about Matt Bushman.
Yes, Matt Bushman. Yeah, he's going to be their top receiver. But let me read you this headline from the Deseret News recently. 8 years of different BYU quarterbacks produce unpredictable results. So, like, they go back from 2010 where it's like... I'm not going to go through each of these, but some of these names may sound familiar to you and me, maybe a few others. Like, Jake Heaps, highly recruited guy, did nothing. Riley Nelson, who... whatever. They have guys like, again, Jay Keep, Riley Nelson for a couple years. They have guys like Taysom Hill being injured off and on. They bring in guys like James Lark, who nobody's heard of. Injuries come out. Christian Stewart comes in and does some stuff. Or they just have all this. Like, the only year they had really good quarterback play recently was when Tanner Mangum was a true freshman, when he came in that week one versus Nebraska and had that Hail Mary where people are freaking out for a very good play. But
yeah, I wandered over to Cougar Sports Wire with our compadre Mitch Harper.
Yeah, my good buddy Mitch.
And I appreciate that his depth chart literally says Zach Wilson or Joe Critchlow or Bo Hodge or Tanner Mangum. That, I think, tells you everything I know about this offense.
Yeah, and their win total is 5.5.
Is that charitable?
You want to know who they play this year?
We'll get into that later.
One note real quick. They open at Arizona, who should be, okay in the Pac-12?
Pretty good, yeah.
2-touchdown underdog.
Ouch.
They have a reasonably tough schedule. Except they play Cal, at Wisconsin, at Washington. And so they play some pretty good teams. But
so then,
they're not, if they get to a bowl game, that would exceed my expectations for BYU.
So then would it be fair to say that this game has the potential to be kind of a defensive slugfest if, things play out the way that I think they will? Because they do have a lot of production coming back on defense. Corbin Kaufusi is back. Sione Takitaki is back.
He's really good,
Butch
yeah.
Pauu is back. Those are three guys right there that combined for, I'm trying to add it up in my head real quick,
a lot
of tackles
just
for
saying,
loss. Let's just put it that way. And, at least, I think, 11 sacks between them. So, I think it'll be interesting if the front four can put pressure on Love and it devolves into kind of a, who blinks first kind of thing on defense. I think that'll be a fun game to watch.
It's also a 3-point, I forget who it is, but it's a 3-point favorite. I forget who it was. Shoot, I should have my article up here I'm working on. Or it'll be up by the time you read this. Who is a 3-point favorite? It was, come on. BYU is a 3-point home favorite, which basically whatever pick them, essentially. So I think you're right. It'll be low scoring because BYU's defense is going to be good, as they typically, even last year when they weren't very good overall, their defense was mostly pretty good. Mm-hmm. Utah State's defense will be much better than last year, and BYU still struggles to have a running game. Quarterback play, again, like Mitch Harper, pick a name out of a hat, roll a dice or something. It's going to be one of those guys. Mm-hmm. If it is Tanner Mangum, they'll be better off, I think, assuming he's healthy. But I think points will be at a premium. Only reason last year there was a blowout because there were 3 defensive touchdowns. Obviously, that's not going to be the case, but I think it could be like a 17-10 game because Utah State's offense will probably move the ball fairly well, but BYU always seems to have something good defensively. But I'm going to go with the Utah State win, but it'll be a close one.
All right.
What was your prediction? Did you say that yet?
I have that as a win as well.
Okay. Then they host UNLV. Is it after a bye? No, not a bye week. They host UNLV. I think it's at home. Yeah, hosting, as I mentioned. We'll get to the Rebels preview later, but this will be one of the tougher outside of Michigan State. Air Force is different because they're running attack, but this will be the best balanced offense they'll face since their opener, I'm thinking.
I mean, I think you're right, because we know that the Rebels have a pretty potent running game. But, in the same way that we talked about with Jordan Love, I think we're both expecting Armani Rodgers to take a step forward in his second year as a starter as well. So I'm really not thinking you're going to see a similar kind of result to last year where UNLV raced out to a big lead.
Yeah,
and
that
then Utah State came all the way back and then some. I'm thinking this is kind of more of an offense versus defense kind of thing.
Yeah, I have to agree with you because Rodgers, assuming he takes a step forward, he could run well, he could pass well. Yeah, they're replacing a couple receivers, but this is a game where I could see a lot of points again, but it's going to come down to the Aggie offense versus the Rebel defense.
I think you're absolutely right.
Because also, one thing too, the UNLV, not only have Rodgers, Charles Williams, Lexington Thomas, they're going to have one of the best running duos, top three running game possibly. Air Force is always going to be good. Fresno should be better with men back there. Juwan Washington, San Diego State, Alexander Madison. Like, there's a lot of good running attacks, but they could be third or fourth running attack in the conference, maybe better, depending how those two guys go. And Rodgers as well, when he'll get a, what, maybe 500 yards possibly running the ball. That's going to be a difference, and I don't know if Utah State's defense can keep up. Because if we predict a win at this point, we're sitting at 4-2 at this moment.
Well, I mean, let's not forget in last year's matchup, too, UNLV, even though they lost, they still averaged 7 yards per carry on the ground.
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Rodgers also got hurt in that game as well. Because Kurt Palandek ended up as the team's leading passer, and he only had 48 yards passing.
Oh, that was because then the week after they brought Johnny Stanton back over from defense to play quarterback.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that's probably not going to happen again either.
So what's your prediction?
I think it's going to be a close game, but I think UNLV is going to take it this year.
I'm going with the Aggies.
All right, then.
Okay, next week at Wyoming. This is going to be a defensive slugfest. And I really want to pick Utah State because I think their offense is that much better. But I'm starting to feel if I have them like at 5-2, that's getting a bit risky on my part because that's getting close to that over-under 7.5.
Well, I mean, this is another game, again, Utah State probably should have had this one too last year. You know, some of it came down to losing the turnover margin battle badly. They were -4 in last year's game. And, you know, I think that ended up being kind of the worst such kind of performance that the Aggies had on offense last year, mm-hmm. because Love ended up throwing half of his season's interceptions in this game last year. I really don't see that happening again. And I do think that, you know, Wyoming has enough questions on offense to, you know, kind of, you know, make whatever trouble that Utah State's offense might run into a little more palatable.
I just think it will remind me of that Colorado State game from last year, mm-hmm. versus Wyoming, where, what was that, 13-10? Something like
it
that?
It was 16-13.
16-13, so 3-point game. I think it might be the same scenario because Wyoming's offense is going to be dreadful, I think. At least at this point of the year where we're projecting way ahead. New quarterback. Running game was not very good last year. Defense is going to be amazing. And so,
I mean, Utah State basically did everything they could to give away this game last year, and they still only lost by 5.
I'm going Aggies because they're a more balanced team.
I definitely agree.
All right, we ready to go for the next game versus New Mexico?
I believe we talked about that briefly in our Lobos podcast, which...
Do you need to add anything to it?
Not that I could think of. By the way, go back and listen to our Lobos podcast if you haven't already. But if you didn't listen there, I'll just say it here. I have this one down as a Utah State win.
Sorry, say that again?
I have it down as a Utah State win.
Oh, so do I. I guess to give the Aggies fans indulgence... I forget why I said this, even though we recorded this, 3 days ago, I think. I would say just the Lobos defense is not very good. Offense is under new management, so.
Yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
And in my prediction, this could be the game that Utah State Aggie fans, you might be able to get a coach fired.
That's true. We did mention that.
Okay, so if I'm at 6-2 with Utah State, are they going to be ranked at this moment?
I think considering the caliber of teams that have beaten by this point, no. I would say no.
Okay. Because I'm on the risk of seeing like well over exceeding my expectations going through game by game.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, they go to Hawaii where, like we mentioned with the Colorado State game, or not game but season, if you go game by game, there's a reasonable chance to see the Rams could be in every game. But this is games at Hawaii, which going to Hawaii is always weird and goofy. However, Utah State's given a 73% chance to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, and this was the game last year where, you know, everything came together for the Aggies. You know, the defense was on point. They pitched a shutout at home. And, you know, even though the quarterbacks were still splitting time at that point, you know, the offense was efficient. They had the running game going. They were explosive. And so, you know, like you said, I think going to Hawaii is a little bit tougher. But, you know, we know the Warriors are kind of starting over on offense. They're moving to the run and shoot, but we still don't know if they're going to have enough targets to go around for whoever's under center. We know they have pretty solid linebackers, but you know, they have questions up front and a couple of key pieces to replace in the secondary. So I have this one down as a Utah State victory as well.
I do as well, and I'm the game itself I'm fine with, but this winning streak I'm it's unsettling. Because then they play San Jose State, who they should win as well. They should beat as well. Not win as well. Jeez, English, come on. Like, you have them as at three losses at this point, right? Heading into November.
No, I have them at 2 losses.
Oh, so we have the same record?
Well, I think maybe we differed a couple times. I have them losing at Michigan State and at home versus UNLV to
Oh
this
wait,
point.
I have Tennessee Tech as a loss. Crap, that's not right. Who was the other loss I had? Air Force? Oh
I don't
shoot.
remember.
Oh crap. I need to go back and pick one. There's no way I should have them at 8-9-1 at this point. oh shoot. Who did I picked Air Force. Yeah, that's what I picked, the lost Air Force.
Okay.
I think I did. Do I need to go back and listen?
We can do that later.
Oh, okay. No, I gotta make one. I'm gonna say lost Air Force. There you go, because it's at home. Because no, but I said a win versus Air Force. No, I will stick with this and say, because they can beat Tennessee Tech, they can beat Air Force, they can beat BYU, UNLV. Sure, I'll do it. I will do it. I will change. I will do it right now. Whatever I said prior matchups, I'm sticking with this record, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 1. Will this give me the respect of Utah State fans? Because they think we hate them. Some do. Should I pay? Am I pandering too much? But honestly, if you look at the projected win total, they're favored in every game but three.
That's
Michigan
true.
State, BYU's a toss. Oh, sorry, four. Michigan State, BYU's 44%. Wyoming's 43%. At Boise's 22%.
Yeah, and it's those last two games at Colorado State, at Boise State, which, you know, if we want to go back and talk about narratives, those two games, more than anything, are going to decide how, you know, Aggies fans look back at the season.
Here's the thing. I'll say it now. They're both going to be losses. That's
Okay.
it. Because I already had the loss versus Colorado State in our last podcast, because I think the Rams will defense will get it to better get it together. I think their offense will be fine, the running game, and assume if it's Carter Samuels or Evan Hill gets back there, they'll be fine. Because at that point, here's the thing. If they are legitimately 9-1 at that point, or yeah, 9-1, they're probably what, ranked 22nd, maybe 20th.
I think that's a good question. I mean,
Because
because my initial thought is to say that they're like,
not
you know,
ranked,
way up in the also receiving votes.
because the only good team, like out of all those teams they beat, who's a bowl team? Maybe New Mexico State, Wyoming.
Maybe Wyoming, maybe UNLV.
I bet they'd be 25th at that point. If you're 9-1 and rounded off 9 straight victories, you should be ranked.
Well, I mean, let's not forget it took forever for Fresno State to get ranked last
True,
year,
there's
too.
that. So they'll be ranked or close to ranked. But then again, and here's the thing. Here's what it's already gonna be talked about. Not just like Utah State. Oh, we're 9-0. We can do this. We have all the confidence in the world. We're 9-1. No conference losses. We went on the road to beat BYU. We went up to Laramie to beat Wyoming. We all went to Hawaii, beat the Warriors. We're first place in the conference. They are, but here's the thing: they miss San Diego State, they miss Fresno State, they miss Nevada, so their schedule is quite favorable. Like, here's the thing: going to CSU, they could win that game.
They absolutely could.
I don't think they will, though, but they could.
I mean, that's as close to a 50-50 as you get. And, you know, among the, you know, the win probabilities that you mentioned earlier, the one you didn't mention was this game against the Rams, which, by the way, the Aggies by S&P Plus are projected at 56% to win this game. But the way I look at it is, you know, who scores last? Because I feel like this is the kind of game where it's like, you know, first to 35 or first to 40 or something like that. So, I mean, I think both of these offenses are going to be really good. I think they're both going to be able to put up a show against these two defenses. But I mean, I like Colorado State's offense a little bit better, and I had already called that one as a victory for the Rams.
You got to stick with it, man. Can't change.
I do, yeah. But I'm definitely with you about Boise State as well. I mean, I think, you know, long story short, they're still the class of the conference. And at least looking at it right now in late May, I don't see any reason to call for an unnecessary upset.
Yeah, outside of the one game where I think Utah State beat them pretty handily a couple years ago, they've never really been all that close.
I mean, I think they should be able to do better than 41-14.
You would think so, right?
Yeah, but I think Boise's got an immense amount of talent on both sides of the ball, mm-hmm. you know, more so than the Aggies do themselves, and that, you know, that I think is ultimately going to make the difference.
Well, and even with that, Utah State plays three of the last four and four of the last six away from home.
Yeah.
So a lot of travel. Even because, now, okay, going to Wyoming from Utah State, it's not that big a deal, but going to Hawaii is a big deal. Going to like the other two games aren't a big deal, but going to Hawaii, it's like it's back and forth. Like they're in their bye week. If they go in their bye week, it's way up early after Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I think they can play close to Boise. Like, could they beat Boise? Sure, anything's possible, because Boise loses a lot on defense, but then again, they always seem to restock and be fine. Receiving group, we'll talk about them later. It's lose a couple guys like Cedric Wilson, Jake Rowe, tight end. But then again, Brett Rippon's the guy quarterback as it always should have been even last year. So, but here's the thing. My prediction here is 9-3.
Yeah, I have them at 8-4 and 5-3 in conference.
So if they're 9-3, they're probably going to I was gonna say Poinsettia Bowl, but that's not a thing anymore. Idaho Potato Bowl, possibly.
I mean, I think they've been there most recently. My guess is they end up somewhere like the Hawaii Bowl.
True, good point.
I don't think any Aggies fans are going to be complaining about a second trip to the islands.
True. Could this be a 10-win team?
It absolutely could be.
What would it take for them to be that good of a team?
I mean, In looking at the schedule, the only two games that I'm like not totally certain about is like sure losses are UNLV and Colorado State. And so to me, if they win both of those games, then all of a sudden you're moving from 8-10 wins.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, for me, like there's a lot, like we mentioned, there's, well, their favorite in most games, S&P Plus. CSU games, basically a toss up. Wyoming's a toss up. BYU's still a toss up. And UNLV is somehow 70%. So, like, even if they win every game they're favored in by this metric, that's still better than last year at 8-4.
Absolutely.
And then, why can't they beat Wyoming? 9 wins. Boise, BYU, 10 wins. I'm just saying. And then then everybody falls in love with Matt Wells again, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Or they're sweating out for him going to, like, Cal or something.
Well, Cal just recently hired it would have to be someplace like, I don't know.
They were the first one I thought of who typically goes through coaches on a regular basis, and it's not an amazing job outside.
Like West Virginia or something like that.
Sure, Holgerson gets out.
If they finally get tired of Dana Holgerson.
Texas Tech, because Cliff Kingsbury's on the hot seat.
That's true.
One of those type of jobs. So I think we're not that we're saying that's the case, but that's the two side of the coin for him about the West. Do great. And see ya.
Yeah.
Don't
I mean,
great,
you know, and 8-4 might seem pretty modest to some teams in the conference, but I think that, you know, climbing your way back up from 3 wins to 6 wins to 8 wins, you know, I think that if the season plays out like I think we both think it will, you know, there will be a lot for Aggies fans to be happy about, not only for this year, but for in the couple of years beyond that.
Yeah. And it's also, like, here's the thing, too. Utah State fans, remember the very, very dark days, pre and post Chucky Keaton. There were times when they were in the Sun Belt, when Big West held football, independent, where they had to go on the road and play. I remember they nearly beat Auburn after they won the national title, sans Cam Newton, obviously, but going like to Texas, to Oklahoma. They were like, who's the basketball team? I think it's Texas Southern. They played every just Texas Southern. I'm saying, even with Mike Davis, former Indiana head coach down there. Didn't play home game until conference play. Every game was on the road, and they're playing like big time schools. Like they weren't going on the road and playing like MEAC or SWAC or WAC schools. They were playing. I think like the lowest team was like maybe like Nevada or BYU or something. Where they're playing like the top 20 RPI teams in the country. Utah State was nearly at that level where they're needing to fund their program by going taking these almost seven-figure games, like 800K plus games on the road and going like 0-4 and 0-5 in non-league play, not having home game until October and stuff like that. They're no longer the like 120 out of 120 team, like the bottom 5%. They're a team that with the NFL guys, they have like Bobby Wagner and other guys going to the NFL. Also, isn't Chucky Keaton back on staff with them, I believe?
I think so, yeah.
How can we miss Chucky, man, being back in Logan? I guess in Oregon State swept staff, he was out of there. But my point is, if they can get back to even a bowl game again, I get you want to raise your expectations every year. You don't want to be that 7-1 team every year. But again, like I said, they are not a bowl team. They get back to a bowl team. It's like I said, climbing the ladder, get back. If they get 8, 9, somehow 10 wins, be not to like sound condescending, but be glad that you have Matt Wells and what you have right now. Because well, remember what else with Brent Guy on the sideline. People hate Brent Guy because he was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the window for making the jump is open right now.
Yeah.
That's what you can say about this team.
For sure. Like whoever, even with the new DC, everybody they have coming back defensively, I guess the big concern for me is getting better consistent quarterback play, but now that Love's the guy, that should be there. The one big thing is the running game. That's like the biggest thing that's been the past couple years that's just been awful for this team. Get that settled, situated. Like, they potential is there to maybe win the conference.
Dark horse.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's still potential. Hey,
or should we say dark bowl?
Dark bowl. Here's the thing.
Well, I mean, like, that's what their logo is. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah, took me half a second there. But think about it, like, out of all the teams in the league, like who's really better than them? When you think about it, Boise State. There's a lot of teams like in the Mountain Division. Probably just Boise State, right? That you could say 100% sure is going to be better than them. Not even 100%, but she's going to be ranked ahead of them and should be favored and better than them this year.
Well, I mean, we just had our CSU podcast, yeah. And I did, I at least the way that my ranking, my week-by-week win-loss column is constructed now, I do also have Colorado State against ahead of Utah State.
Well, I'm just saying, like, when you look at who they're playing and record and everything, like we struggled picking CSU and Utah State who would win. It wasn't like, oh, Rams no matter what. That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
There's potential for them. Like, I probably would be a little surprised, but going through more deeper, doing more research, seeing who they have coming back, seeing what Love did on his own, where he can improve, their depth at secondary. It wouldn't be like it's out of this world, Leicester, whatever, worst to first type deal to going from what they did last year to winning the conference. It's not likely, but it shouldn't be like this super dramatic shock that they somehow win the conference, especially with that middle of the schedule, which is not overly tough. Yeah, going to BYU, going to Wyoming is not easy, but those are games they could win for Wyoming's offense being bad and BYU quarterback issues and no receivers, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my point. Like, it's out there. Probably not going to happen, but I'd still give them, like, to win the division, get Pat. If they could beat CSU, it's going to come down to beating Boise State to win the division title. And probably even hosting the conference title game.
I mean, that would work for me if I were a Utah State fan.
Am I being too optimistic here, or do you think this is plausible?
No, I mean, I think that's definitely within the realm of possibility.
All right, then. Let's end with that. And no, I'm not just wanting to get Aggie fans to like us more, or me. So, all right, so that's our show today. We got Utah State wrap-up, preview number 3. Next up, we'll be San Diego State because of fierce voting. So thanks for listening. Again, if you listen to this early over at Patreon, we appreciate any support you give us. And the next one will be – here's the thing. Well, I don't want to go too deep in the schedule because when this is released, it won't matter. But if you're a Patreon member, you got this way early. Next podcast – down the road a little bit, just because. But every week we have one on our Blog Talk Radio feed, iTunes feed, Stitcher feed, TuneIn, Are we on Last FM, Matt? Do you know Last FM?
I have no idea.
Are we on Spotify yet? Can we get on Spotify?
I think we have to talk to someone to get on Spotify.
Is that invite only?
We could find out.
I do know for Spotify, there's no commercial rights music can be played, and we pass that test. So cool. Who knows? But yeah, check us out, MWR.com. Check out yourself, Matt K underscore FS for Fresno stuff. Writing. Do you tweet about Overwatch every now and then?
Every now and then, yeah.
So get a well-rounded Twitter feed from Matt, myself, Jeremy Moss, us, MWC Wire. And hopefully by the time this is published, do you think we can get 2,000 Twitter followers by the time this is published in mid-June?
Fingers crossed.
Please help us do that, folks. And again, we'll see you next time. And Aztec fans, you're on deck.